welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. Professor Harriet Hiscock is Director of the Health Services Research Unit at the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne. Her latest research in paediatric mental and physical health presentations to Victorian emergency departments has thrown up some startling results. Most notably, the number of kids showing up in EDs with mental health problems tripled across the 7-year study period. Professor Hiscock is my special guest on the pod today. In the course of our conversation, she mentions the Child Health Poll the RCH runs every quarter. You can find that poll at www.rchpoll.org.au. Professor Hiscock's research is published at mja.com.au and is open access. Welcome to the MJA pod, Harriet. I guess my first question is, what was the gap in knowledge that prompted you to need to do this research?
Well, we knew that paediatric presentations to emergency departments were rising, so we'd already shown that,
yep.
But we didn't really have a good feel as to what sorts of kids were presenting, and we were keen to look at broadly mental health versus physical health presentations in the first instance.
Give us a general idea of how many kids are showing up in Australian emergency departments and with what kind of disorders.
Over the 7 years, we had 2.7 million presentations.
Wow.
To Victorian EDs.
An awful lot.
It is a lot. Actually, 0 to 4-year-olds we know make up the largest age group presenting Victorian EDs. They're mostly coming with physical health problems.
So, yes.
Close to 98% are physical health. So about 52,000 are coming for mental health problems over that 7-year period that I'm talking about. So it's not 2.7 million every year.
No.
But over 7 years.
Yes.
Yep.
And so what age group were you looking at particularly?
We looked from birth to 19 years.
19 years, okay.
And that's partly because that's how the data comes to us.
Yes, right.
Sort of 5-year age brackets, yep.
And so what kind of mental health problems are showing up in the EDs?
The most common one is self-harm, not surprisingly, and you could argue that's where children should be. You know, they might need urgent medical attention,
yes.
If that's what's been happening. But the next most common ones are certainly related to psychoactive substances, so, you know, basically drug and alcohol,
yep.
Related,
yep.
Issues. And then we come to mood disorders, which is depression and stress and anxiety-related disorders.
Assuming they don't, like they're not in an acute crisis,
yep.
In terms of self-harm, why are these kids showing up at emergency departments
when
we know?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's not a great place to be.
There are other services that are available for them.
Yep. So actually there's no research on that in Australia.
Right.
And that's our next study, which we're currently doing, is we're interviewing parents who have turned up with their child to either, with anxiety or depression to the emergency department to try and understand why.
Mm-hmm.
So we've only got hypotheses at the moment, and we think part of it is parents actually not realising that their child has a mental health problem, so it's a mental health literacy issue. And we've got some evidence to support that. At the Royal Children's Hospital, we run a national Child Health Poll, which surveys about 2,000 parents across Australia every quarter. And when we ran our poll on mental health, parents of particularly primary school age kids were very poor at recognising that their kid might have a mental health problem. They were better at teenagers. So I think step one, they get to the ED and they get told, well, actually your child's got anxiety or depression. They go, oh, okay. But I think there's also a real issue of not knowing where else to go.
Because there are other places to go, aren't there?
Yes, yeah, there are. So certainly, you know, in the community, it's anything from, you know, the GP who might refer you to a psychologist or a paediatrician or a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
Schools have obviously counsellors and psychologists, which are often, you know, really involved with children's mental health. So there are other places to go. But often, yeah, the parents don't recognise it as a problem or they're not sure where to go. And I think the third issue is they might go to their GP who then refers them on to a service, but there are waiting times for those services.
Yes.
Or there's out-of-pocket costs,
mm-hmm.
for those services, and all the services don't operate in the hours that, you know, working families can get to.
Are emergency departments equipped to deal with mental health disorders?
In children, not necessarily. Okay. So the very, you know, the big tertiary paediatric ones do have good support.
Mm-hmm.
They might say they need more, but, you know, when you go to smaller emergency departments and regional and rural ones, they often don't have good support on hand.
And by support, do you mean a paediatric psychiatrist?
Or a paediatric mental health clinician, so a psychologist, social worker, psychiatrist.
Right.
So someone who's expert in children, yes.
Because they're not just small adults in this case, are they?
They are certainly not small adults.
If most emergency departments aren't set up really to deal with paediatric psych issues, what kind of burden are those sort of presentations placing on emergency departments?
Yeah, so what we found in the data when we compared the mental health to the physical health presentations was that the children who came with the mental health problems were triaged, more likely to be triaged as urgent. They spent longer in the emergency department, so they're taking up more time, and they were more likely to be admitted to, you know, the ward of the hospital or even transferred to another hospital compared to the physical health.
Is that because there's a perception that they'll get more appropriate treatment in the ward rather than in emergency?
But to get admitted, you have to be pretty severe. So
I can't
tell from the data, but I suspect they're the kids who were, you know, very depressed or not safe to be let home, basically, or else, you know, maybe being physically violent at home, those sorts of things.
Yeah,
so
it's
quite hard to get admitted. So the vast majority don't get admitted.
Mm-hmm.
But there's certainly these kids, and they're also more likely to come out of hours, these kids.
Right.
So they're presenting after midnight. They stay longer, they're more urgent, they come after hours, and they're more likely to be admitted. So that's all sort of saying it's higher burden.
Were you surprised by any of the results you saw?
I was. I thought there would be an increase in mental health presentations, but I didn't expect a tripling of presentations over the 7 years.
Do you have a pet theory as to why it's all happening?
I think it is a combination. I think lack of – so in the initial sort of interviews we're doing with families for the second study, there's certainly a group of families who didn't realise that their child was having a panic attack. They thought they were having – seizures or something terrible happened to them.
Yeah.
Or the child with recurrent abdominal pain, they didn't realise that was anxiety. So I think the mental health literacy is a huge issue. But then we are also getting reports of parents saying, I tried to get into the psychologist or the psychiatrist or the paediatrician or the child and adolescent mental health service and I couldn't get in.
Yeah.
And then my child's behaviour deteriorated, so here I am because I don't know where else to go.
Yeah.
And that's wrong. Kate, and I think a big part of it is there's been a relatively lack of funding for mental health versus physical health full stop, but then child mental health versus adult mental health. And, you know, the Headspace centres that were set up have been great, but they're 12 to 25-year-olds, so there's nothing for the under 12s, and we know that to tackle these problems, you know, it's the parents and their mental health as well as the child's mental health.
Sure.
It's complex. It's not just a couple of sessions with a psychologist and off you go.
We know there's been a rise in the prevalence of depression in young people. Is that linked as well?
Look, it probably is. There hasn't definitely been the same, you know, documented rise in anxiety, but I think you know, that rise wouldn't be enough to explain a tripling of presentation to the ED.
Yeah. So I'm handing you a magic wand right now.
Yes. What would I do?
What would you do? I mean, is throwing money at the problem the answer?
I think I would go to existing workforces and systems.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, where do kids go? So the preschoolers, they go to maternal and child health nurse, GPs, early childhood educators. The school age kids go to, you know, the schools, basically, and school counsellors and teachers.
Yes.
And I'd say, why don't we need to educate across those workforces, families, about what mental health looks like in children. And then we need to provide for those people, they need to know where to refer the child and how to do it. And we need better, I think, publicly funded services. So the child and adolescent mental health service sees like 3-7% of all kids with mental health problems. Like it's a tiny portion. And not all kids need to go there. When funding for psychologists came in. That was great, but we saw a big uptake by middle class. Still, the poorer families can't afford to access that care. So I think we need better care. And I would like to see hubs of care sitting in community health centres and sitting in schools, which have support for the kids' physical health and their mental health, and support for the parents in terms of their parenting and mental health.
How cool would that be to
wouldn't
have,
that be great, Kate?
To have
yep.
like a health clinic, like a GP, mm-hmm. nurse, physio, yep. psychologist yep. attached yep. to a school?
Yeah. And there's a few schools starting to do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And there's one called Doveton College in Victoria.
Yes.
And they've made a real community centre out of their school from kindergarten through to the end of school. But, you know, they all do it on various amounts of uncertain funding from philanthropy. And I think, you know, there's a colleague of mine, she's got a model going in some of the low SES areas in Mornington Peninsula, and she's got a paediatrician and a paediatric fellow going to four schools once a week, and they've seen 1,000 kids in the first year. And she said, you know, we're trying to get funding to get a social worker, because that's what we also need.
Mm.
But they do case discussions with the school psychologist and the teacher, and everyone comes together
wow.
and talks about these kids. So rather than fragmenting the care, it's all done in hubs of care. I think people are talking more about integrated care, and they are setting up models. But if we're going to have these models, they need to be rigorously evaluated. Because
yeah.
I think everyone thinks they're good, and, you know, but if you don't show that they're making a difference, and that, you know, if you don't do the health economic evaluation,
exactly,
then they sort of fall over.
Yeah,
they don't get sustained.
If you can't convince the practitioners that there is a living to be made.
Yes, absolutely right. And certainly my colleague who's doing it in Mornington Peninsula, the paediatrician is bulk billing through Medicare, and that seems to be working. So the families aren't out of pocket.
Yeah.
And the paediatrician's getting paid.
What needs to happen with Medicare? I mean, are there more item numbers needed, or are we just not funding it this enough at all publicly?
I think fee-for-service is a huge issue, because the way things run for a GP, for example, at the moment, is you get more money per minute for shorter consultations than you do for longer consultations. So as a GP, it would be easier for me, you know, I'm not a GP, but if I was a GP, it'd be easier for me to see lots of kids quickly. So there's no reward for longer consultations, even with the mental health item numbers. Ideally, I would love to see us move to more of a bundled payment to say, this is your practice. You've got this many kids with these issues. Here's a pool of money to help support them and keep them out of hospital.
How do we convince government?
I think we look to, and I think government is looking to, I think primary care needs to stand up and say this, and they do, and they are starting to say it. I think we need to look to the UK and lessons learnt from, you know, other health systems and what they're doing. So there is a form of this in the UK, and I think some things have worked
okay.
and some haven't. But there are examples which we can learn from, because the fee-for-service really at the moment just rewards throughput.
Yes.
And not quality of care.
Yeah. You can't do a mental health assessment in 6 minutes.
Exactly. And I think the issue for children, just, you know, coming back to that again, is because of the ageing population, we know that most of the chronic consultations, longer consultations in GP land are taken up by adults. So kids are missing out.
Is the Headspace model, can that be replicated for younger kids, or does it need a whole new thing?
I think I wouldn't replicate it as it is, because that's just mental health. And I think in younger children particularly, mental health problems are tied up with physical health
mm-hmm.
problems.
Yep.
So, you know, chronic illnesses, developmental problems like autism in kids.
Oh.
And they're also tied up with parenting and parent mental health
yes.
and social health. So once you get into disadvantaged communities,
mm-hmm.
yes, they might need help for the kids' behavioural problem, but actually they also need help for housing
yep.
or drug and alcohol problems. And you can spend all your time trying to work with the kid, but if there's no food on the table and there's no roof over their head
yep.
or mum and dad have got an unaddressed mental health problem, you're not going to get anywhere.
Was your study able to isolate whether or not the socioeconomic factor is what's driving a lot of this?
No, because it was really high level sort of administrative
mm-hmm.
data,
yeah.
but we will be looking at that in our interviews with families. We've got information on that. I mean, all we can really say is there wasn't much difference in terms of mental health presentations in rural versus metropolitan areas. We would see more kids turning up in the rural hospitals because there are fewer services, but we didn't actually see that.
Interesting.
And it's interesting, yeah, because we've done another study looking at interviews with 30 clinicians around Australia about barriers and enablers of access to mental health care for kids. And the rural clinicians say, actually, we do better because we know the psychologist down the road.
Yes.
And the GPs know us, and we just chat to each other and we make sure that kids looked after. So we always say, oh, there's no services for the rural kids, but actually
the service they have is well connected. Yeah, and longitudinal and all
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. All of that.
Wouldn't you like to wave a magic wand and make kids just less depressed?
Yeah, and less stressed and anxious and all of that. But, you know, there's kids. I mean, I still work a session a week in clinical to see a lot of this stuff. And there's a lot of things you can do around parenting and support.
Sure.
For these kids, particularly early on, because you can see the trajectories that the kids are on. And we know that, you know, the major modifiable risk factors are parenting and parent mental health.
I think we're all too connected to what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
I think we overload ourselves. Do you see that in kids? Do you think that's a factor going on here?
Anecdotally, I mean, how do you get the evidence to look at that?
True.
That's really hard.
I mean, but screen time isn't enough, is it? You need to.
No, it's not. I mean, what are you seeing on the screen? But look, there's certainly, you know, there's lots of people who think that the rise of, you know, probable rise of anxiety in kids is related to social media. And then, you know, anecdotally, there's certainly kids who, you know, watch pretty awful things going on around the world, and that does affect them, but they've probably already got the temperament or personalities to be affected by that in the first place.
Yeah, but how do little kids do that? I suppose they show the chronic physical stuff.
Well, they do, or they get aggressive or have more meltdowns, things like that, and then parents think they're being naughty, so they get, you know, get into the harsh, abusive parenting space, which is not helpful.
You've got further research being done. What, apart from the stuff that you're doing, what else would you like to see being done in terms of research?
Well, I think I'd really like to see some of these models of care, these integrated hubs being set up and properly evaluated. So, you know, let's go into the communities. There's plenty of communities who want this. Let's go in, let's work with them, let's set them up. Let's use existing workforces, existing infrastructure, so we're not trying to recreate the wheels, but really help them in better detecting mental health problems with kids, knowing how to respond. And then let's, you know, put some funds into responding, and then let's evaluate it. Does it, you know, does it lead to better mental health? Does it keep kids out of hospital? Does it let parents work more and be more productive? So you can do a whole mental health and health economics evaluation of it.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks for your time, Kate.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.